welcome to Ray and Pay Today.
Those are some smooth jazz instrumentals given to us by a former guest. Wow, that is talking sports with friends. So hello, and welcome to the show. It's Ray and Tay Today, and I'm Ray. That's Tall Rayside.
Hello, everybody. I am Tay, Eric Taylor, and a special shout-out to Michael Powers, who gave us that nice little smooth intro and is letting us rock some of his smooth jazz tunes. You can check out his music at michaelpowersmusic.com. And, hey, we're here for a Friday. Rainy out here in Arizona, and maybe it's tears since the Cardinals released Adrian Wilson. But you want to join us on a great basketball show, get into some other things, and Ray will break it down for you. It's 718-664-9098. Check us out at Twitter, Facebook, Ray and Tay Today. Also, you can email us. We love being interactive and answering your questions at rayandtaytoday.com. I'm sorry. The website is rayandtaytoday.com. We're everywhere. But the email is rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. But go to the website, answer the poll questions, check out the photos, everything, listen to old shows. And we got two guests, hopefully, today. Ray, break down this hip-hop basketball show, man. We bouncing from countries and worlds.
Yeah, we're international. You know, we used to say we're coast to coast, but we're across the globe. You know, spin your globe today because we're about to come from all over. So, yeah, so we're going to quickly do our breaking news segment like we always do. We got some news in the world of baseball and golf and NBA, NHL, college basketball, and then we've got a couple of great guests today. We've got Ed Odeven from the Japanese Times. He's the chief basketball reporter, and if you're worried, it's not going to be in Japanese. He's an American guy. He's born in the Bronx, raised in New Jersey, by way of Arizona State.
Yeah.
Exactly. So he'll be there talking to us a little bit about basketball, the Japanese basketball. There are some NBA players and NBA coaches. Bill Cartwright's the latest to go over there and do his work, his magic in Japan. So we'll talk about growing up in the States, how he got to Japan, basketball in Japan, worldwide basketball, what he thinks of the NBA. And then we've got a friend of the show, Ian Begley from ESPN New York, who covers a lot of New York sports, but right now it's fully Knicks season. So Ian is the Knicks beat writer. He covered for ESPN New York. He knows the Knicks up and down. We'll talk to him. Yeah, ESPNNewYork.com. We'll talk to him about the Knicks, where they're going, Carmelo, Amari, this past game against Oklahoma City. Yeah. And then we'll get into some college basketball at the end of the show. We'll talk some colleges. Of course, it's March Madness. We're going to take you through the month of March, and you're going to enjoy the madness with us. So let's jump right into it. Let's get into some breaking news.
Well, for me, man, before we get to the golf and El Tigre over at Duval, I got to just get some of this NFL stuff off my chest. Their moves are wheeling and dealing. We're rocking Mondays and Fridays. We might be with you next Wednesday because free agency starts Tuesday. But right now, you got the Dolphins re-signing Matt Moore and wide receiver Brian Hartline. You know, teams can re-sign their own players. But there's a lot of casualties and cuts and things moving because they can start talking, teams and free and agents, player agents can start talking this weekend, basically tonight and going into Saturday. And Tuesday at 4 o'clock, free agency starts. So Adrian Wilson, 12-year veteran safety, was released by the Cardinals today. That's got to hurt. That's really got to hurt. I mean, obviously we're hearing, you know, stuff from some of the guys with the Falcons and who might pick up Abraham, Seattle, and the Niners are both looking at him. Steven Jackson from the Rams, he voided his contract. Looks like the Falcons, Steelers, and Cowboys might be sniffing up the veterans tree over there. Wes Welker might test free agency, but the Patriots are trying to work things out with him. And the Panthers, Ray, they let go of their corner. Oh, gosh, I'm forgetting his name. But they released their corner, who has been there for years. So, and also Atari Bigby was released from Jacksonville. So you got a
right,
lot of
guys. And the Ravens
guys.
Said they're going to go. They said the Ravens said that the LRBs, they're higher priority than Kruger. And
okay. Yeah, I imagine.
Yeah,
so.
Urlacher. They said Urlacher might be a free agent also. It might not. You know, he's sniffing. He'll stay a Bear. I can't see him ending up anywhere else.
Yeah.
Brian Hartline re-signed with the Dolphins. So he had what looks like a big contract, although what, 12 or 13 million guaranteed, 12.7 million guaranteed. So Brian Hartline coming back. They still need more talent at the receiver position. So Mike
well,
Wallace.
I hear they're saying, yeah, they're going after
them.
Mike Wallace. Yeah. And I heard the Vikings might be trying to pursue Greg Jennings. Really interesting. You know, so that'd be interesting. Also,
he's a perfect
it looks
fit
like,
for them.
Oh, definitely. The NFL is looking like they're going to approve some HGH testing, which would be incredible, you know, incredible to hear. So tell us what's going on in golf, man. I know that my man Tiger's doing some things.
Yeah, so Tiger's, so the WGC Cadillac Championship. So Tiger's leading. He's at minus 13, two strokes ahead of Graham McDowell. Phil Mickelson is tied for third with Steve Stricker at minus 10, so they're three strokes behind Tiger. So we'll see. We got some good golf. You know, anytime Tiger, Graham McDowell, Phil Mickelson, Steve Stricker, Bubba Watson, Keegan
Bubba
Bradley.
Watson,
I mean, that's
one
a
of
nice
the golf
leaderboard.
Boys. You seen that video with the golf boys?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Bubba with the chest hair. Go ahead, Bubba.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
that's
comedy.
Like the new the Harlem Shake meets golf?
Yeah,
that's
everybody.
The golf boys right there?
Listen, everybody's making
oh,
their
hilarious.
Videos.
So, that's hilarious.
Know,
well,
we talk about the golf, but I would say before we get to a legend in baseball, I got to tell you about NBA. Derrick Rose, clear to play. He's just trying to get the confidence to jump off, you know, that left foot for dunking. But I think that's kind of interesting. Our boy Gennaro Parker, who did not stay with the Atlanta Hawks. He's got a couple teams pursuing him. The Jazz. They're looking like they're going to sign ex-Clipper player Travis Lee. And the Warriors, they're looking, you know, everybody's making these little end-of-the-season signings for the playoff run. And then the Warriors signed Malcolm Thomas to a 10-day contract. So,
right,
and
your
NBA
guy
stuff.
Over in Phoenix, Marcin Gortat turned his ankle so badly,
yeah.
They're saying he probably is done for the
He's
season.
Done. He's done for the season, yeah. That one hurt. It's hard, man. It's hard when you hear about that. Look, Adrian Wilson and Gortat. So over here in Arizona, it's hard. And the NBA and the NBAPA, they're close to agreeing on HGH testing. So I think
Good.
That's kind of interesting.
Good.
Yeah.
Even though I don't know how much of a problem it is in NBA, but let's go. Let's get it out of all the sports.
All the sports, right? Everybody should be clean. And speaking of the NBA, man, I just want to give a quick shout out. It's not crazy breaking news, but the Heat and the Blackhawks. We don't talk much hockey, but, you know, 24-game point streak, an 11-game winning streak for the Blackhawks, and the Heat with a 16-game winning streak, and LeBron at the buzzer the other night, and they both played tonight with the left-handed layup to the basket to beat the Orlando Magic. You know, just kudos to the Blackhawks and to the Heat, because those streaks,
well, yeah,
they're
the
pretty
Blackhawks-
impressive.
Are at that. Listen to this. The Blackhawks are. There's a 48 game season this year because of the strike lockout in hockey,
yeah.
And it's a 48 game season. They've played exactly half of their games, and they're 21-0-3. So
That's
they've
ridiculous.
Scored a point in every game and won 21 of them. And a lot of them they've played from behind. I mean, they haven't been playing great hockey the last month or so, but they're just getting it
but
done.
They've been clutch.
I mean. This team is unbelievable. I mean, oof, what a year they're putting together. I mean, this is a year of all years. So, make the transition. Speaking of which, MLB, our boy, tomorrow is going to announce, Mariano Rivera is going to announce that this is his last year.
Call him the GOAT.
So, we'll reminisce. And you know, Steve, Tim Kirchin was saying something that I kept saying for years, which is, first of all, relievers don't get enough credit. And granted, they only pitch one inning. I get it. But in the playoffs, you know, every inning counts, especially that ninth inning, which is the toughest inning. But the gap between Mariano Rivera and the next best player at his
That's
position
ridiculous.
May be larger than any other gap in baseball between, you know, the best shortstop and the next best shortstop, the best first baseman
sport,
and the next best first baseman. And I didn't even go to any other sport, which we might it might be true there. But this guy really is, I mean, you can argue just about anything, right? Is it Willie Mays? Is it Babe Ruth? Is it Hank Aaron? Is it, you know, Lou Gehrig? Is, you know, whatever, Lou Gehrig or Pujols or, you know, Roberto Clemente or you know, whatever. But you can't really, in good conscience, argue that anybody's even close to Mariano as the best pitcher.
Incredible.
In any era, the live ball era, the dead ball era, the, you know, whatever era you want, this guy is just so dominant at his position. And, you know, he's of course a first ballot Hall of Famer, but I think he needs to be put in the upper echelon of baseball players, period, and certainly of pitchers, even though there's a strong bias against, you know, against relief pitchers.
And basically dominated with one pitch. That's what's so incredible. I
that
mean,
he learned,
unhittable.
You know, in his second year, right?
Yeah.
And he wasn't doing great as a starter. They put him in the bullpen, and he learned that split-finger fastball. So we're going to tribute Mariano all year.
Yeah.
Excellent. So it looks like we've got our caller. Let's patch him in.
Talk some hoops.
Yeah. Is that Ed? How are you?
Hello, good morning from Tokyo. Good evening to you guys in the States. How you doing?
Hi, how are you? Great, thanks
great,
for calling.
Welcome to Ray and Tate today.
Yeah, March Madness is already here, yeah?
Definitely.
WBC version of it, Mariano Rivera version, J.R. Smith missing great shots, or almost great shots.
Ed, you, listen,
it is
Ed,
a great
you, you're going right to our heart with that one.
Yeah, that was a great comeback, but yeah, fell short.
Yeah, well, he scored 36. J.R. Smith did, so he carried the team, especially with Melo being out. But at the end of the day, one of the things he's always had an issue with is shot selection. So not it's okay to miss a shot, but I'd rather you miss a good shot than miss a bad shot.
That would have been true. That would have been a big win, though. I mean, the Thunder, that's a you know, that's a great team.
Well, Ed, here's a question, right? I mean, you know, we know, you know, Amari and Felton both had 16 and played, you know, pretty well, and they had no Melo, but they were in the game. But when JR is kind of gone like that, and obviously, you know, Woodson said he had isolation but kind of wanted him to penetrate, in general, though, do you think at some point they are just going to have to figure it out and either start Amari or just like in the last 8 minutes, even against Miami on you know, last Sunday, have Chandler, Amari, and Melo on the floor? Because I really feel you're going to have to go with your best guys, and Amari is too much of an offensive threat to not be on the floor.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you on that, where I don't think JR can be your second scoring option for the, you know, behind Carmelo.
Right.
He's too streaky, too hit or miss. I think Amari brings more of a, you know, a calming influence.
And he's a legit post scorer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Ed, well, let's take a step back. You know, we introduced you. I don't know if you heard our introduction, but you know that you're the chief basketball reporter for the Japan Times.
Mm-hmm.
No, sorry, the Japan Times. And
Japan Times, correct? Yes.
Yeah, and so tell us how your story got you from New York City, you know, born, like you told us, born in the Bronx, raised in Jersey, and then went to Arizona State. And so tell us about the migration. How did you make it out to Japan, and how did you start covering basketball for the Japan Times?
Well, I guess you could say, you know, as a sports nut, as a big sports fan, and as a journalist, you know, working in the States, worked at the Daily Star in Tucson for a bit during my school years, freelancing, working in Phoenix, also the Tribune there, East Valley, and Tempe, Mesa.
Wow. Okay. That's where I'm out here in Scottsdale, so that's great.
Yeah. I lived in Flagstaff for 5 years, you know, Suns have training community mini camp up there. Went to some did what I did as much as NBA coverage as I could do. Driving up and down the I-17 there, going from Flagstaff down to America West. did a lot of high school coverage, a lot of college basketball coverage, Pac-10, Big Sky, and actually a different version of March Madness. We call it kind of February Frenzy is the high school state tournament where a lot of the reservation schools, you know, just have great crowds and, you know, pack the gym wherever they play. I've seen 10,000 people there for two high school girls teams, Navajo Reservation schools. Just a great
the college
atmosphere.
College girls teams that don't get those
high
kind of crowds.
Girl, yeah.
No, I know. Some college don't draw that.
True. Kind of as a career, you know, goal, and it's just the reality of working in a very small paper there in Flagstaff, the Arizona Daily Sun. You know, the opportunities for travel and to cover big events are very limited. And I saw an opportunity here at the Japan Times with position being opened, and I applied for it and went for it, and it matched. New Pro League was started in 2005. The World Championships were held here in 2006, and the Track and Field World Championships 2007. So kind of a lot of things lined up, and very fortunate to have the opportunity to cover some big events and to see the growth of the sport.
Wow, good for you. Yeah, you saw somewhat of LeBron's kind of maturing in 06, right? And then that was the year before he went to the finals, or the summer before he went to the finals and got swept by the San Antonio Spurs. But good.
The World Championships, that was, you know, Pau Gasol-led Spain won it all. Big upset, Greece beat the U.S. in the semifinals where those guys just couldn't make, those guys couldn't adjust to the pick and roll and just, you know, a lot of the team ball version of basketball, and they excel for outside shots, kind of like how LeBron did early in his career. And that was kind of a big loss, but also helped his maturation. Being part of that defeat, you know, everybody thought they were, unstoppable. All those one-on-one guys, but they got smoked by the Greeks.
And it was a blessing in disguise because, as I remember, you're right. They had a few big men that the U.S. squad couldn't handle, and that's when Jerry Colangelo and then eventually Mike Krzyzewski decided to have this new philosophy, which is, all right, you're going to make a commitment for 4 years. You're going to play in the summers. You're going to play in the World Championships. You're going to play in the Olympics, and we're going to win back. The U.S. team said we're going to win back, you know, what they believe rightfully theirs, which is the mantle of, you know, best basketball team, best basketball country. And ever since then, it also helps to have Kobe, Kobe, LeBron, Carmelo, Paul Howard when he was healthy. Yeah, to have all this talent. But that was really the impetus for the U.S. to take international basketball pretty seriously and not just show up, you know, 2 weeks before, have a run of training camp, and then think you could beat anybody. The game around the world has gotten a lot better.
So true. Now, what I'll say that one thing that I'm really been grateful to be able to do is I got to see them play the U.S. and then the World Championships that year in 2006. And being able to attend the Olympics the last two times in Beijing and London, covering the tournament, just seeing all the great teams and seeing, I mean, just the tournament in itself is very, very, very competitive. And being able to see the U.S. Against China, just electric atmosphere of that game, knowing that it was going to be broadcast across the country, everyone was going to be watching it in China, and just the buzz in that press room after the game, in the press conference, I mean, just, you know, just people knowing how many people were watching that game, it was exciting. And then the final game both times against Spain, those were also great games.
Yeah.
Amazing. So, Ed, let me ask you this. I mean, just talking about strictly Japan, and you said you have the BJ Japanese League. Where is Japanese basketball at just in its own entity, the quality of play? Are there any type of players you think that could make it to the pros? Where do you sort of see Japanese basketball in the competition right now?
It's taking a slow step up toward the world, you know, the good teams, the mediocre teams. It's not even really at the mediocre level yet. There's a lot of infighting within the organization, the Japan Basketball Association, the governing body, and within the two leagues, the corporate JBL League and the Basketball Japan League, the BJ League. BJ League has been the market for growth. Six teams in the first year, 21 current teams. Part part of that is due to expansion with using that money that comes in for the new teams to help, pay the bills. That's part of it. But also you have an influx of imports coming into the country to help raise the level of ball and to give competition to the Japanese players who, at the college and high school and lower levels, they're not getting the best. The coaching level is not so good in many cases, and just the structure, where in the high schools there's generally one team rather than the JV and a freshman team. You got guys just on the bench that aren't getting playing time. They might practice for 7 hours, but they're not getting the competition they need to really excel. And then just being an island country, a country that's a culture all to its own, the competition isn't quite there, where in Europe all these countries are surrounding you, or the U.S., you have the AAU, kind of structure built in place. So Japan really isn't there. Baseball-wise, Japan has a history of baseball. The culture brought over from, decades earlier, and soccer has made much more inroads than baseball. If a lot of these guys would go to Europe and play at an early age, or even if there was pressure to send them over when they're in college, they would be more exposed to the international ways.
Right. Shout out to Japan. They had a big win today in the World Baseball Classic, beating Taiwan.
That was quite a game, yeah.
Yeah.
That was the story sort-wise last night.
So Ed, the big land so far this year, earlier this year, was Bill Cartwright coming over to Osaka,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he took over a team that was 5-19. So, they play back-to-back games, two-game series. So you lose to a team one day, you can bounce back and win the next. And then claim a split. Bill Cartwright joined the Osaka team, which is a couple hours from Tokyo, a team that has won 3 championships in the league's first 3 years. And the former coach, the last coach entering this season, Ryan Blackwell, former Syracuse player, he's now coaching a team in Guma, more of a suburban, rural area. And the first coach of that team, a Japanese guy, Mr. Tenichi, he coached under Paul Westhead.
Oh, wow. Legendary.
Wow, so you got a lot of NBA.
That was his mentor. Yeah.
That's great.
So what's your coverage in terms of being able, like if I'm in Japan now, and obviously if I'm a big NBA fan, do you guys have a game of the week with the hour differences? What do you get to see, and who are the big teams and players in Japan of the NBA?
Well, Kobe Bryant is incredibly popular. I'd say most popular player in Japan. And, funny because, his name, Kobe, is, Kobe in Japanese.
Yeah?
His father, was eating it, likes the steak, right?
Yeah.
Kobe beef.
Allen Iverson, if he was still playing, I would say they'd be neck and neck. His small stature and just his guts and hard work and the way he played the game really endeared him to the Japanese. Now, Jeremy Lin was there, and that was excitement as well, seeing an Asian face do really well last, Lin Sanity when that started.
Right.
Carmelo's popular. Yeah, I mean, a lot of the big names are popular. And games of the week, some people, have their sling boxes as well to kind of try to watch stuff more current. But there'll be games of the week and highlights as well.
Great. And do they follow European basketball as well, or is it pretty much, NBA is kind of the goal, and everybody who, as a kid, wants to be anybody who follows basketball wants to be an NBA player?
Yeah, I think the NBA is the first big thing they're going to watch. Come tournament time, I think the Final Four people get excited about that. They're real hardcore fans, but the Euro basketball isn't as available like the regular coverage on TV.
Okay. I just figure with the 14 to 17 hour time difference, depending on where the games are being played, it could be tough, especially for kids to watch games, and it's hard to get that culture, especially of live. I guess you have to watch these games on delay.
Yeah, I think the real hardcore fans, the ones I've come to know, they're buying it directly through the NBA package, League Pass, to watch on their own computer, mostly.
Oh, great.
Because the amount of live games on the network TVs, soccer, baseball, soccer, and other things, game shows, dramas, those kind of things are dominating the airwaves a bit more. Now, there are a couple games of the week shown, and there are highlights shown, but often they're going to be early or real late. So you want to watch it all, you buy the package.
And how do you keep up? So how do you keep up with March Madness and what's going on in the U.S.? And I don't know if you still follow, you know, baseball and other sports. So how does an ex U.S. guy or a U.S. citizen, but living in Japan, how do you follow it?
Okay, well, I'm on Twitter. I'm on Twitter reading a lot of the witty comments and just, you know, keeping up with the scores and working as a desk editor, you know, at a national newspaper, Japan Times. For sure, we're going through the wire every day putting together the sports section, you know, looking at internet sites, gauging what are the top stories, you know, and reading stuff on the train as well, putting out a couple stories of key players, key games, you know, a combination of those things.
Well, so
and
right
watching
now,
watching the TV as well.
Right, right. So right now, what are you thinking about, you know, how we're getting in a stretch run of the NBA and the Miami Heat winning streak? And are you thinking that we might have Heat against Thunder again, or do you sense something else?
I think the Heat are playing at a level right now that is, you know, beyond anybody else by the stretch of any imagination. They're playing great. I don't see them not reaching the finals. Can they keep this level up through two more months, three more months? I think LeBron is in that zone right now that nobody else is in. So I think the East is theirs to lose. The West, I think it's up in the air, possibly.
Yeah,
do you think Oklahoma is a lot weaker without Harden?
A little bit, but also you know, Westbrook is either really good or a bit of a wild card, I think. You know? But let's see. I think a month from now we have a bit more of a gauge with the West. I think Denver might surprise some people and make the Western Finals.
Really?
I like what you heard of that team. They're young, too. They're real athletic.
And they're tough at home. So if they slide into that four spot, that at least gives them home court for the first round, which, you know, a young team like that get a little momentum. You know, they're tough. They're a tough team. You know, we've debated this back and forth on Ray and Tay. You know, one of the classic, you know, hallmarks of a championship team is the ability to score in the half court, to rebound, and to, you know, play D. And for the most part, Denver can do everything but score in the half court. Who is their go-to player? So that's kind of that's always been my question, is when you need one basket, almost every team can point to that guy, except on Denver, who's that guy? It could be Gallinari. It could be, you know, is it Iguodala? Is it
Chandler.
Ty Lawson? So it's Wilson Chandler, right, exactly. So who's that guy in a half-court situation? So that's our question for the Denver Nuggets and George Karl.
And the Clippers as well.
I think the Clippers, though, I think Denver might be a surprise element to reach the Western Finals, but I think the Clippers are probably more poised to do so.
Yeah,
do you think Blake Griffin is at a point where he can get you a basket in the post, or do you think the Clippers will be healthy enough that you could depend on a Billups or a Crawford or even Chris Paul to get you the big shot? Because that's my question. I mean, for me, I don't know if anybody could beat OKC or the Spurs, because I think the Clippers and the Nuggets, they just, in the last 3 minutes of the game, as we saw last Sunday when the Clippers lost to the Thunder, I think that they really have issues scoring in clutch situations. So do you see Blake being that guy now?
I think in the half court, I think Chris Paul, as almost like a second coach, can really help you there in the final minutes in the playoffs with more of a half court style game.
Right. Yeah. No. It should be interesting. I mean, they didn't prove it yet, so hopefully they could do it this year. Because last year they struggled when they got swept by the Spurs. And Tony Parker kind of outshined Chris Paul. I mean, if I'm being honest, he kind of took it to him. So we'll see this year. Maybe things will change.
Yeah, the other thing is back to the East. You know, everybody thinks that the common thought is that Miami should waltz all the way to the finals, and maybe Indiana is kind of one of those teams that's built because of their size to give them trouble. And obviously the Knicks fans look at the fact that they beat them 2 out of 3, although the Heat, you know, just came back to win. So the question is also, you know, is there such a thing as peaking too early? Because the Miami Heat have been on this run since, you know, basically since the new year, and they just look unbeatable. But the question is, can you be unbeatable for 5.5 months? I mean, that's a long time to be on a roll. So that's something that the Heat have to worry about.
Were the Spurs too hot too early last season, if you bring up that comparison? Or was it a matter of Father Time catching up with them?
Yeah, I think that was more the issue, that they had a flaw that they just couldn't ultimately hang with younger teams. And in back-to-back years, right, the Memphis Grizzlies beat them, you know, as an 8 seed the year before, and then the Westbrook, Harden, Durant trio, and Ibaka as well, the youth. They just were too young and athletic. So, again, the second year, not being young enough and athletic enough. Now, they got Kawhi Leonard, and so he helps them, and it looks like Tiago Splitter is going to turn out to be, you know, a fairly decent player. So they have the opposite problem, where they lost Tony Parker for a month, and now they're going to have to pick up where they left off in early April. So whereas the Heat are starting early, the Spurs are going to start in April to really have the team that's going to take them as far as they'll go in the playoffs. So we'll see. But it looks like the Western Conference is going to be great for the playoff matchups.
Hey, Ed, looking forward to it. We'll get through March Madness first, and then we can shift more focus to the NBA.
That's exactly where I want to go with
kind
you,
of juggling,
Ed.
Juggling our time and energy for both. And for me, it's also the stretch run of the basketball season here. Playoffs start in May here, so we've got another two full months of the regular season.
So I wanted to ask you about that. Speaking of March Madness, and I know you have ASU and St. John's dear to your heart, as you know, St. John's is definitely dear to Ray and Tay's heart. What do you think? Obviously, Arizona and Arizona State have a big game this weekend in the Pac-12, but coming to March Madness with all these number one seeds losing and all these top five upsets and the top 25 just rotating around, who are the, you know, two or three, four or five teams that you think might be able to win six in a row and cut down the net?
It's been a bit of a crapshoot this year. You know, I think Gonzaga is pretty strong, but can they really do it? Not sure yet. I think they might make their first Final Four. I like what I've seen from Indiana. Some people think they're a bit too soft, but I think they've got the depth to probably do it. Looking elsewhere, Miami. I think Miami might be able to do it.
That would be great if you had Miami and Gonzaga, two schools that, you know, have never been ranked as high as they've been ranked this year, go to a Final Four. That would make for a great, exciting tournament.
But do you expect some of the traditional powers to emerge this year as well?
Yeah, I think, I like Michigan just because of Trey Burke. I think obviously the tournament comes down to great guard play, and I think he can get a shot whenever he wants. My only problem about Indiana, when you've got a freshman in Yogi Freeman running the point, they can't always get the ball to Cody Zeller. Now, I love Victor Oladipo. That's my guy. I think he's player of the year. I call him Victor O, him and Otto Porter.
Yeah.
But I just think at the end of the day, you know, you're going to have to look for a guard-heavy team, someone like a Louisville, because you've got Siva and Russ Smith and their defense. Louisville could go on a great run as well as Kansas, too.
How about
Georgetown?
I like what I see of them defensively. You think they're consistent enough?
Yeah, so their problem is going to be scoring, a lot like Wisconsin we saw last night, and to some degree a few other teams in the Big Ten. But they rely so much on Otto Porter, and they're going to have trouble scoring consistently for six games. But their D is great, and they're always in games. The problem is when you're in games, all of their games are going to be close. So they'll either win by, 2, 3, 4, or they'll lose
by a bucket or two. So I like Georgetown. I actually wasn't so high on them through the middle of the season, but this run they've been on has been great. I just have trouble seeing them winning six games or even four to get to a Final Four.
Yeah, but you look at the Pac-12 right now. It's still a bit down, I think. Is it going to be another year or two till they really rise up again? Just the level of play is not that good.
No.
Well,
but what do you think about Shabazz Muhammad?
They have some decent players and some decent teams. I mean, maybe not top five teams, but certainly they have some talent. You know, in the middle of the conference. So you figure Arizona, Oregon, UCLA. You know, they've got some. They'll put some teams in the tournament.
I don't think it's quite at the Big Ten level right now. I think the Big Ten is
oh, no,
is,
definitely not.
What the ACC
definitely.
And the Big East were a couple years ago.
Yeah, and we said that actually, that on a prior show. We talked about that. We said, look, this is the year not only does the Big Ten, you know, are they head and shoulders above everybody else, but this is the year where they actually have to deliver in the tournament because they have a lot of people that have stayed, right? So upperclassmen that are probably going to leave. And so this is your year with, you know, Deshaun Thomas and Cody Zeller and Trey Burke, and all these guys are probably going to be leaving to the NBA and Keith Appling leaving. So ultimately, this is the year for the Big Ten, for bragging rights, for recruiting, for the next five-year cycle. They really need to do well in the tournament so all the representative schools can say, all right, basketball isn't just played, you know, in the Big East country and the ACC and in out west in the Pac-12 and the Big 12. So this is a year, a lot of pressure, actually, I think, on the Big Ten.
And that might be a good thing, though. It might, you know, the best players may shine, and it may even be more exciting because of that.
Definitely. Hey, Ed, so what do you think about a star like a Shabazz Muhammad? Do you think he's one and done and could be the number one pick with Nerlens Noel being injured?
That's possible. I think he's shown he's really good. There's still more workouts to come, though, and a couple other guys may step up. So I think he's in the mix, though. Top five? Sure.
Yeah, I like him. I personally like Ben McLemore at that shooting guard swing guard position. I think he's kind of a pure two. And if I'm an NBA prospect, I probably rate him a little bit higher than Shabazz Muhammad. But it should be great. I mean, I know you probably keep your eye on that Pac-12. And it looks like, you know, they'll get a few teams in the tournament. They may make some noise.
Yeah, we'll have to. I'm a bit more curious this year than in the last couple of years, thinking, okay, we know the league is down a bit. Okay, but can it be a pleasant surprise? Can it rise up a little bit?
Right.
Yeah. That's something I'm looking for, hopefully.
Definitely, definitely. So, Ed, listen, we thank you for joining us, and we definitely want to have you come back again. Can you tell our audience where they can find you at Twitter and where they can read some of your articles with the Japan Times?
Sure. We have a basketball page on our website, which is going through some changes now, but japantimes.co.jp. You'll see coverage of the NBA and the BJ League. We run an exclusive column from Sam Smith these days, who is filling in Peter Vesey's on sabbatical right now, kind of, you know, in career change mode, deciding if he wants to write full-time again.
Right, we
ran
an
exclusive column from... We ran him for years as an exclusive column. We're using Sam Smith every other week now. And on Twitter, it's @@ @Ed_O'Devin, like odd even but 1D, @_ODEVEN. And I'm working on a
Bill
Cartwright column this weekend about, okay, taking stock of his first 12 games in charge. What do people think about him, what he's done? Former Timberwolves draft pick Rick Rickert, R-I-C-K-E-R-T. You might remember that guy, right?
I do.
Big guy,
yeah.
Rick. Played 2 years at his hometown, Minnesota, was drafted. And he was a guy that didn't pan out with the T-Wolves and bounced around a lot of pro leagues around the world, but a very fundamentally sound player. I had a nice interview with him the other day talking about, okay, what does Bill bring to the program? How does he run a practice? How does he take over a team that's 5-19. What's it like now, looking back at those first month and a half with Bill in charge? That's kind of the premise of this weekend's column.
That sounds great.
That's
well,
great.
Again,
well, we'll definitely keep an eye on it. Thanks again for calling. We'd love to have you back on the show. And we'll certainly look out for the Bill Cartwright.
Thank you for your time, guys.
All right. Take care, Ed.
Great. And thanks for joining us on
now.
A Saturday morning for you.
You're welcome. Okay, have a good Friday night. Bye, guys.
Appreciate it. Take care. Thanks.
Bye-bye, Ed. Ah, oh, that's great. Ed Odvin from the Japan Times. You got to like that, baby. Reinte International. And he is definitely a basketball aficionado, covering things in Japan, the NBA, and even following, you know, college hoops. I think it's really interesting and fascinating. And we'll definitely have to check out that Bill Cartwright, you know, article that he's got going up this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I'm glad that we have some international exposure, man. That's great. So he's following Reinte today, and we've got a hook into Japan. So we'll keep an eye out on the two pro leagues in Japan, and see if they can get any more ex-NBA coaches or kind of ex-NBA players to go out there. But that's an interesting perspective that he's got. You know, it's tough for him to keep up with the NBA and all the stuff that's happening in the States, because they're 14 hours ahead. So when we go live on the East Coast at, let's say, 8 o'clock, you know, that's the middle of the day for him. That's 10 a.m. In Japan. So he's got to work. He's probably working in his office, and then, you know, he can't just stop and watch 2 hours of a basketball game. So it takes a lot of work.
But that is his work. That's the thing, you know. So like he said, he's got to follow things on the internet, the train, wherever he's at, because when you are still reporting about the NBA and the youth Sam Smith, who I had actually interviewed earlier this season on H2G Radio from Chicago, Sam Smith, big Bulls guy, they, having that type of writer, and used to have Vessi, who was on
Peter
Radio Vessi,
our guy.
Yeah, our guy, yeah. You know, that's their job, man. He keeps tabs on the NBA and sort of lets the Japanese people there know, you know, what's going on in the NBA through the Japan Times. So I think that's great, you know. I think that's really great. And, so hopefully we should be having Ian Bagley join us from ESPN very soon to talk about those Knicks, man. We got to talk about this game last night. You got to love J.R. Smith, but it's the gift and the curse. When he has such a big game, sort of like Ed said, you don't want JR to be your number two scorer. You know, I definitely don't. I mean, I love when he steps up when Melo's out, but I think at the end of the day, it's going to have to be Amari that is going to have to really get the touches, with Felton being the quarterback and penetrating and doing pick and rolls, you know?
Yeah, look, why the Knicks were so good in the beginning of the season was because of Felton, to some degree, getting everybody involved, and of course the defense and the threes. So that combination of spreading the ball around, open shots, hitting the open shots, playing D, you know, that was the recipe that the Knicks were using in the beginning of the season. Now I think they became a little stagnant, reliant on Carmelo. So the one good thing that I took out of this loss was Carmelo.
I think we have Ian join us, so let's
Ian,
bring him in. Ian Bagley, are you with us on Reinte today?
Gentlemen, what's going on?
Hey, what's up, Ian?
Man?
How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Doing great.
Doing pretty good. You know?
Considering
the
Knicks lost last night, but we're doing okay.
Good. Yeah, that was a winnable game, huh?
Yeah, you feel like it was kind of stolen from us, right? When you have Melo out, and the effort they put forth was so great, and especially the defense in the third quarter, it put a bad taste in my mouth just to see that last play. I know JR was, you know, had the hot hand, and, you know, Woody said he ran the play for him, but hoped, you know, that he might penetrate. JR has got to get a better shot than that, especially
right,
with Westbrook on him, right?
Yeah, I mean, it looked like he had the baseline where he could have taken him baseline, or cross them over and going into the paint. It looked like those two opportunities were there because the other four defenders were focused on the other Knicks who were on the other side of the floor. So it looked like the opportunity was there. You know, the fourth quarter in general, I thought it was pretty sloppy. The Knicks shot 4 for 18. You know, they didn't have a field goal in the final 3 minutes. So execution down the stretch definitely left something to be desired. But I think it's okay to take some positives from that game, being that The Knicks were playing their fourth game in five nights, second game of a back-to-back, and flew in from Detroit early Thursday morning, and they competed with one of the top teams in the NBA without their best player. So certainly some positives to be drawn, but I think it always, you know, should bother people when the team loses a winnable game at home.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the things that concerns you also is that you're getting your scoring really from three guys. You know, it's especially last night, it was really Felton, Amari, and J.R. Smith. Pretty much nobody else scored. You didn't really get much from Iman. You didn't get much, obviously, from Kurt Thomas. You're not expecting that much. And then White with his spot start as well. So the Knicks become reliant on, you know, bench scoring, and that means J.R. Smith. So that's going to be a dilemma in the playoffs, right? Again, we come back to this whole question of, you know, when Amari is on the court with Carmelo, they're having some, you know, they're having some issues working out, you know, shot selection. And then if Amari comes off the bench, then he's your go-to guy. Where does J.R. Smith fit into that, right? Especially come playoff time, when each possession counts, right? Is he your second scorer, your third scorer? What do you think about, you know, kind of his role in the playoffs?
Yeah, there needs to be a hierarchy established, I would agree with you, come playoff time, because there needs to be defined roles, and, you know, guys need to understand who gets the ball, where the shots come from. And to me, that's on Mike Woodson. And he said that as far as the secondary scoring option goes, some nights it'll be JR, some nights it'll be Amari, and that's okay in the regular season. But I totally agree. Once the playoffs start, there needs to be a little guideline set for the Knicks as to where to go with the ball and who deserves the bulk of the shots. Because I think it was a mistake last night not going to Amari. I thought he was, you know, effective down low. He wasn't shooting it as efficiently as he had the previous two games, but he was still causing problems for Oklahoma City. And I think they would have behooved the Knicks to go to Amari in the paint, have him get fouled, get him to the line, rather than trying to hit, you know, 15, 17 footers and three pointers. I think they went away from Amari, and I thought that was a mistake down the stretch.
Yeah, definitely. Ian, also, my issue, like even the Miami game, you know, 8 minutes left, he brings back in Chandler, Amari never comes back, it's 87 up. I thought we should have, you know, we could have beat Miami, but I think another issue I have, whether Amari comes off the bench or not, you know, him and Smith, I think Amari has got to play in the stretch, because you need that another offensive threat, especially in the post. You can't beat the Heat without Amari being able to get 15 to 20 a night to win a seven-game series against the Heat or the Pacers. How do you feel about him playing in the stretch run?
Yeah, I think Mike learned his lesson there, because he actually said the day after the Heat game that he made a mistake in not playing Amari down the stretch. He said he should have had Amari on the floor in the final minutes of that fourth quarter against the Heat. And if you look at what's happened since, so granted, Carmelo Anthony wasn't healthy for any of the three games, but Amari has been on the floor in the fourth quarter. So it seems like Mike is committed to playing Amari down the stretch. So what it comes down to is it's a matchup thing. If he wants both Amari and Carmelo on the floor in the fourth, the Knicks are going to have a tough time guarding perimeter players if teams go small. But the flip side of that is, the opponent is going to have a tough time containing Amari and Tyson on the board, so the Knicks should have an advantage on offense. It's just weighing that disadvantage that you have on defense when Amari's out there.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So what's up with Melo? Is he playing against the Jazz? What's the latest, and what did you hear?
Don't know. He's questionable right now. The Knicks are going to shoot around tomorrow morning, so we'll know more tomorrow morning. It's just there's a lot of uncertainty surrounding this injury, because Melo talked about how it's been bothering him for a few weeks, how he has tightness in the back of his knee and there's a fluid buildup. You know, the Knicks keep calling him day to day and he ends up sitting out games. So there's no real definitive answers surrounding this knee right now. Everything I've been told, people are saying that, you know, he's okay. He's just resting. He'll be fine. And as long as the MRI that the Knicks took recently is accurate, there's no structural damage, he should be okay. It should be just a rest thing, but, you know, we'll find out tomorrow morning or maybe tomorrow evening if Melo will suit up against the Jazz.
Okay. Now, let us take a look ahead, if we can, to the playoffs, right? Knicks look like they'll probably either be a 2 or a 3 seed, which right now means that they'd play Chicago or Boston. What do you think about those two teams in terms of matchups for the Knicks? And obviously, the Chicago has the big question of does Derrick Rose come back in time for the first round or not? But either way, what do you think about those two teams?
I mean, either way, with Chicago, you've seen that they've done a great job against the Knicks defensively. They've really slowed down the Knicks on the perimeter, and they've taken away Tyson Chandler on the pick and roll. So, you know, they've given the Knicks fits on offense, both when Carmelo Anthony was out there and when he was not healthy for that first matchup in Chicago. So, you know, we haven't seen the Knicks really solve Tom Thibodeau's defense yet, so that certainly has to worry you if you're a Knicks fan, if they have to face that defense in a playoff series. As far as Boston goes, you know, Boston's played extremely well without Rondo, and it seems like they've kind of figured things out, figured that, you know, getting the ball to Pierce, getting the ball to Garnett is the key to success. And the Knicks have not faced them without Rondo yet, so it's hard to really gauge how that series would go, but what you do know is Boston always gives the Knicks hits. They're always great games, regardless of the regular season records or the seeding. It doesn't really matter. I mean, I think you can bet that game will go 6 or 7. And I think, you know, the Knicks really, they have playoff experience cumulatively, but not as a team together. So that could be an issue when you're playing a Boston, a team that's kind of been through the wars together in a 6 or 7 game series.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, no, definitely. And Ian, I know you got to run. I appreciate you joining us and stuff, but I got to ask you real quick. Two things real fast. One, you think we're going to keep Kenyon Martin for the rest of the season? And two, did Amon Shumpert just come back too early? Because he just doesn't look right, Ian.
Yeah, with Kenyon, I think they are going to keep him for the rest of the regular season. Everything everyone says points to that happening. As long as Kenyon doesn't get hurt and as long as another need doesn't crop up on the roster, then Kenyon should be around for the rest of the season and into the playoffs. As far as Amon goes, I think that, you know, maybe we took a little too much stock into what we saw early on with him, because what I've seen the last 3 or 4 games is Shumpert really start to look like the Amon Shumpert that we saw last year on a defensive end. And that's really where you need him. And obviously, if you're going to put him as your starting shooting guard, he's going to have to knock down shots. He's going to have to produce offensively as well. I think that will come in time. I think because, you know, Shumpert's skills, as far as what we saw last season, is he's a great defender, and he's not as strong of an offensive player. So it makes sense that his defense would come back first, and his offense would take a little longer to really come back to the level where it was last season. So I think let's be a little patient with Shumpert on the offensive end, and let's appreciate what he's doing on the defensive end for this team right now.
And also remember that we forget, with Adrian Peterson setting some ridiculous bar out there, that he and Derrick Rose basically got hurt on the same day. Derrick Rose is not back.
Absolutely.
So, you know, he came back very fast, Amon Shumpert.
He did. He did. And you know what? Maybe there is something to the theory that he came back too quickly. He hasn't complained about his knee. That's really all that we can go on. It doesn't seem like his knee is an issue. It seems like it's fully healed. So everyone heals differently. Everyone, you know, injuries affect everyone differently. Maybe Shumpert just healed faster than Derrick Rose.
Yeah. Hey, Ian, did Chris Copeland steal something from Mike Woodson? My man Chris Copeland can't get no minutes. And honestly, Ian, Copeland needs to sometimes play over Novak or James White. I mean, Copeland can score. We need him. I like his game.
Did he try to ask Woody's daughter out? I don't know. Something happened, man. Because, you know,
that's how rumors get started.
He's in the doghouse, man. I don't know what he did, but I agree. I think Woody really needs to think about expanding his rotation, and that includes playing a Chris Copeland, because look at the schedule in March, 18 games, 6 back-to-backs, 10 road games. You can't play, you know, 8 guys and expect to get through this month. Okay, you really need to expand the rotation. You need to go deeper in your bench just to keep guys fresh, make sure guys are healthy going into April, into the stretch run. So I think you'll see Chris Copeland on the floor at some point during this West Coast trip.
Yeah. Well, Ian, man, thanks, man. We really appreciate you coming on, giving us the
Nick
insight.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, tell everybody how to reach you, man, on Twitter, and tell us about, like, some of your newest or latest columns where we can read about Ian Bailey and the Knicks, man.
Well, first off, I appreciate you guys having me on. Thank you for that. I'm more than happy to come on whenever you guys need me. And if you guys want to follow me on Twitter, I am at Ian Begley, I-A-N-B-E-G-L-E-Y. And just be sure to keep it locked on the Knicks blog on ESPN New York for your latest on the Knicks.
Great. Well,
definitely,
keep up the
definitely.
Great work, Ian. We're certainly going to read and listen and consume all the Knicks stuff we can. And, you know, you're always a great guest on our show. So we're happy to have you and ready to, you know, ready to have you when you're ready to come on.
Sounds good,
let's go,
guys.
Copeland. We'll beat the Jazz on Saturday, definitely. I want to see Copeland play, Ian. Come on.
We'll see. Hey, who knows what happened with that, man? I may have to get to the bottom of that.
Yeah, please. I want to hear you in the postgame when I'm watching New York Knicks Extra with Al and Wally and Alan Hahn, who do a great job. I want to hear you because I always hear your voice. I want to hear you say, Woody, can Copeland get some run?
All
thanks,
right, guys.
Ian. Take care.
Man.
All right, Ian. Be good. Take care.
All right. Bye. Oh, man. Ian Bailey from ESPNNewYork.com. Always great. Read his blog about the Knicks on ESPN.com. And, you know, like you said, his Twitter, he brings it to you, man. He asks Woodson great questions. I always, you know, check him in the post game. And he's on the pulse. You know, if you read his Twitter feed, he's always on the pulse with injuries and practice and what's going on with the Knicks. So true Knicks fans definitely need to, you know, listen up with Ian, man. So, hey, you know, we rocking and rolling. Great show. So tell me, which of these games this weekend, going back to March Madness, is it? We have a bias because we love Duke, North Carolina. Is it that? Is it Indiana, Michigan, or the last time maybe ever or for a long time, Georgetown against Syracuse in the Big East?
Wow.
What's the first must-see for Ray this weekend and for our audience?
Well, for me personally, that Georgetown-Syracuse game is going to be sentimental. But they could play again in the Big East tournament.
Yeah.
So you know, I think I got to go with the quality of the game, and that's the Indiana game. I got to really,
Ooh.
Really think. Yeah, this
that's
is the year
battle.
Of the Big Ten. Like I said, it's theirs to lose in terms of being by far the best, you know, the best conference in the country. So to me, if you really think about it, the game and what a great game, like Duke, that's akin to Duke Carolina. They play every year the last weekend. It used to be on Sunday afternoon, now it's Saturday night. They used to play that last game of the ACC schedule. It used to be, you know, every other year the other team would host. So this year, that game, like that mantle of game of the year, you know, has to go inside the conference of the year, right? It's got to go inside the big, you know, the Big Ten. So I got to go with the Big Ten matchup. I got to think
Indiana-Michigan
game.
Trey Burke and these guys and Glenn Robinson, they could get it going?
Ooh. You know, I actually think that Indiana's going to win that game. I think they're going to go in. They're going to be a little upset at the fact that they've lost a few, especially being number one.
Yeah.
And they're going to go
And they
want to
get that Big Ten title.
To Chrysler and they're going to beat them. Yeah, so they're 13-4 in the Big Ten. Yeah, they're going to go in there with a chip on their shoulder, and I think they win a tight game. But that should be a great game. I mean, Indiana Michigan at the end of the year for the Big Ten title. That might be the game of the year. So yeah,
well, I
got to
tell
you,
I think it's going to be great. I'm watching that, but I also think North Carolina against Duke. Even though Ryan Kelly's back, I want to see Kelly and Plumlee sort of against Harrison and McAdoo in this new sort of smaller lineup. Can this lineup work? You know, they kind of started this lineup against Duke, but, you know, now it's been rocking and rolling. Can this lineup work for North Carolina against, you know, Roy Williams against Coach K? Can North Carolina beat Duke and sort of propel themselves to maybe even getting a number 5 or 6 seed in the, you know, in the tournament? This is going to be a good game.
Yeah, well, look, it's a weird time, too. It's Saturday night at 9. I mean, so for all you guys
wanting
to watch
nine,
this game,
and Georgetown
so they're at 9.
Before that. on ESPN.
Right. They're at, but they're at noon. That game's at noon. That game's an early game, and then Duke Carolina game's at 9, and then on 4 o'clock on Sunday is the Indiana Michigan game. So a lot of great hoops this weekend, and you know what? It just ratchets it up another notch from March Madness. Some of these teams have started their tournaments already. You know, the smaller mid majors have started their tournaments already.
Hey,
wow!
You know what?
Another great show.
I got to give a quick shout out to Izzo and Michigan State. That was incredible how they took care of Wisconsin. They blew them out. Great game. Appling played great, and Izzo, what a coach, man!
Well, they held Wisconsin to 43 points. Wisconsin's got trouble scoring, but still, 43 points. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. No, it was definitely a great show. We got to shout out Ed O'Van and Ian Bagley for joining us on Ray and Tate today. And, hey, we'll be back Monday. Get ready for some college hoops talk, some NFL free agency talk, and a little bit of NBA. It was a great show. We'll have a great weekend.
Yeah, talking sports with friends. Thanks for joining us, and have a great weekend.
Ray and Tate today. We are out. Peace.